Blog Talk Radio.
We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Welcome to Missouri Grassroots Radio. It's Wednesday night again. We're here every week at 7 o'clock. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. And let me tell you, folks, there's a lot of stuff going on. If you've been watching the news or listening to the radio or hitting the internet, the stuff is flying, and we are going to cover some of that tonight. Lots of things going on. I don't even know where to start. This week, the whole gun control thing kind of blew up today. 23 executive orders in one day. Just amazing. And ridiculous executive orders and scary executive orders. Some things with a little bit too much government overreach. We're going to talk a little bit about that later on today with some folks from the Gateway Civil Liberties Alliance. Just amazing. I was also out at Jefferson City this morning talking to the Patriots there today. It was the Consent of the Governed rally, and about 200 or so, a little more than 200 Patriots showed up today to let the legislators down in Jefferson City know just exactly who is running the show and who isn't running the show, and hopefully that message came across loud and clear, and there was a great lineup of speakers today. And I was fortunate enough to be one of the speakers for just a few minutes to talk about education. And, you know, I'm going to go on a little rant about education again, you know, like I do, because it's kind of a passion of mine. Homeschooled my kids. Was a school board member before I homeschooled my kids, you know, have a lot invested in the issue. And part of the things that I was trying to get across today was that we're just all being sold a whole bill of goods on this whole education deal. There's so much stuff going on in Jefferson City, and it's costing you, the taxpayer, so much money. You know, Missouri mandates that we spend 25% of our budget on education, and we actually spend more than that. I think the line items are like 27 to 29%, and then there's some talk, and I've had representatives confirm this. You know, I don't have anything in front of me to back it up today, but that when you go through all of the pensions and all of the details that go along that are related to education, K through 20, that it's actually more than 50% of the budget. So there's whether or not it's 27 or 29 or 50%, that's still way, way, way too much money to be spending on education. And why do we spend that much money on education? Because education is a public works project. Public education is a public works project. It's not about educating kids. Hasn't been about educating kids for a long time. It's about a lot of other things, but it's really not about educating kids. And, you know, until people wake up and understand that, you know, the children are not the priority here, and it's about the money that's the priority here, we're never going to get any real education reform. And the only way we're going to get any real education reform is if the people take back the educational process. Right now, we have a Department of Elementary and Secondary Education that works autonomously outside the jurisdiction of the legislature in accepting federal funds, and we in Missouri have adopted Common Core standards here, and the caca is about to hit the fan on the Common Core standards, because if you read Missouri Education Watchdog, you'll know today they broke a story that because we have Common Core standards here in Missouri, because DESE, you know, DESE accepted the federally funded grants to do that, which are unfunded mandates for later on, we have Common Core in Missouri. And along with Common Core is all about the assessments, folks. It's a nationally mandated curriculum. It's the same curriculum for everybody across the country. And you may say, well, that's not such a big deal, but here's the story. Common Core is all about the assessments. And what's going to happen with Common Core is they have mandated that Missouri, and I guess all the other states too, take these computerized Common Core assessments. Now, you may be asking, well, you know, computerized Common Core assessments, you know, are the schools set up to do that? Well, 13% at least of our school districts in Missouri are not set up to do the Common Core assessments, the digital computerized Common Core assessments. So the big deal there and the big question mark there is, where is that money going to come from? Well, think about it. You guessed it. We're going to have to fund this unfunded mandate with these Common Core assessments. And we're going to have Gretchen Logue and Ann Gassel on with us next week to talk a little bit more about that specific issue and more about the Common Core in general. Something else about the educational issue too, folks. For the last several years, the Missouri legislature has been introducing legislation for educational reform, and they're hanging their hook on charter schools to be the great savior of public education. And the reason that's not going to work is charter schools are public schools. And public schools are mandated to Common Core curriculums. So if you thought that you, most people feel that or understand that charter schools are independent, privately run schools, well, if they're getting government funds to start them up, which, you know, that's the other piece of the pie, you know, it's they're really edgy businesses, startup businesses with your tax dollars, you know, to initiate all of those nice little private, you know, which are not really private schools. If you think that all of those schools that are started up with tax dollars are going to be able to work autonomously, they're not. They're all going to be mandated with Common Core standards. So basically what you have, folks, is public education repackaged and presented to you in a new form, and they're just calling it charter schools and expecting you to think that it's something different. So, you know, it was really interesting. I made a point today when I was speaking to the crowd that the Missouri Republican platform tried to make a point of being, you know, pro education reform, pro-child, pro-fix the problem kind of a deal. And I think, let me see if I can find it here, what they have said, that it is their moral imperative to provide education to Missouri's children. Well, along with that moral imperative that they've listed in their platform, they support things like, and it's a laundry list of stuff, for government to generate more legislation to cross district boundaries, to promote charter schools, to further manipulate the tax structure to support these changes, to provide guidelines to those local schools on discipline, interject more parental authority to determine the appropriateness in the oversight of social issues instead of already assuming that exists, guidelines for hiring and firing teachers, and then with all of these things, you know, they continue. It's a laundry list of items for them to justify just interjecting more legislation into the bureaucracy. I mean, there is nothing about anything in the Republican Party platform or nothing about anything in legislation that's been introduced in the House or the Senate in the last several years that does anything to return schools back to the people. They're certainly not going to let go of that money. They're not going to let go of that authority. And so, folks, we have just been sold a real bill of goods on education. It's really, really time for us to start thinking differently about what is really going to be the difference in turning education around for our kids. And as we debate this, as we have for decades and generations, you know, our children are falling through the cracks. So, you know, while conservative establishment Republicans are telling you they support charter schools, they support parental involvement, they support this, they support that, what they really support is a lot of legislation that just bloats the bureaucracy and keeps the money flowing in, and the special interests keep feeding and getting fatter off the tax dollars. It's just something that we just have to wise up, folks. The government cannot fix this problem for us. It's something that we're going to have to take back from the government, and people start have to think about privatizing all education, because anything that the government touches, they're going to turn it into a bureaucracy, and they are not going to help your kids. So that's, I mean, there's my rant. I'll get off of that, and we'll move on. There's another I have some good news for you. A few weeks ago, we had Dr. Brian Ray on the program. Dr. Brian Ray is probably the nation's, if not the world's, most foremost authority on homeschooling. Dr. Brian Ray of the National Home Education Research Institute is coming to St. Louis on January 31st. He's going to come and talk to anyone who wants to attend at the Family Vision Library. There'll be a discussion there on issues such of homeschooling, parenting, Common Core, and how it affects private and homeschoolers, because that's all encroaching on you. All of your homeschooling rights are going to be taken away because of the Common Core. He's going to come and address some of these issues with you, so please feel free to come. I will be putting some information up at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org about his visit here. We hope that you'll come and attend. Bring your friends and family, and you don't have to be a homeschooler to attend this. And as a matter of fact, I would recommend that everybody who has a stake in raising kids and educating kids come out to hear Dr. Brian Ray. He's a fantastic speaker, and he'll be here again on January 31st. We have a really good lineup tonight. I mean, we're just kind of flying by the seat of our pants. I'm straight in from Jefferson City this afternoon trying to finalize everything, but I'm very excited about our lineup. We have Mason Weaver with us tonight. Most of the Patriot folks know about Mason Weaver. He is an amazing person and a fantastic guy. I had the opportunity to talk to him just a little bit this afternoon, too, before I went on air, and he's just a delight, and I'm thrilled to death that he spent some time with us this week. We're going to have him up in just a few minutes. And with all of the gun situation blowing up in our faces with, you know, the Obama deal, with the 23 executive orders, we had a shooting here in St. Louis. But, you know, never waste a good crisis. I'm sure that's going to play into the mix somehow. We're going to have someone from the Gateway Civil Liberties Alliance. I had a chance to talk to Steve Marks earlier today. And because of technical difficulties, and I'm very technically challenged, I couldn't upload the interview. So we're going to have Greg Jeffries from the Gateway Civil Liberties Alliance to talk to us about the issues with gun control and hopefully get some folks in Missouri interested in that organization. Let me tell you, those people are firecrackers about gun rights. And they have a great organization and some great opportunities for you to get involved and engaged. And we'll talk to him a little bit later on about that. Also, as we have been doing for a very long time, watching the developments in the Middle East and the threat of Islam on the American culture, Liz Trent from Spirit of Resistance and RejectDawah.blogspot.com, both of those addresses are .blogspot.com, is going to join us today with a great message about the propaganda that's being fed to us and how we need to understand and be on the lookout and be able to differentiate the propaganda that's been fed to us from the Islamic culture, and we need to reject it and not buy into it anymore and learn to see what's real and what's not. So she's going to give us some tips on that and some resources to look at. And then as we have often found in the Patriot movement and the conservative movement, is just flooded with very talented writers and authors, and we have yet another author with us tonight. David Workman is going to be with us tonight, and he has a new novel called Absolute Authority, riveting novel. You can take what you will from the title. He's going to be on with us a little bit later to talk about his latest works, and we're excited to hear from him about that. So, as I said, we have a lot of stuff going on. We're going to get right to it. Let's hear the Grassroots Minute from Terry Varner, and then we'll come back with Mason Weaver.
This is the Grassroots Minute. In a blog post made on left-wing site Blue Hampshire, New Hampshire 3rd District State Representative Democratic Cynthia Chase asked her fellow legislators to use their power to make New Hampshire less welcoming to any conservative or libertarian planning on moving into their state, not to mention those that already live there. She is referring to a conservative project that has been underway in New Hampshire since 2001. The idea is that Americans with conservative ideas are to move to New Hampshire, gather in communities, run for office, and work to drive the state towards libertarianism and conservatism. It is called the Free State Project, and its members are called Free Staters, and believe that the state's motto, live free or die, should really mean something, and it is those citizens whose freedoms legislator Chase wants to oppress. In her December 21st post, Chase wrote that in her opinion, Free Staters are the single biggest threat the state is facing today, and said there is legally nothing we can do to prevent them from moving here. In this country, you can move anywhere you choose, and they have the right. But what we can do is to make the environment so unwelcoming that some of these who would choose to come here will actually leave. One way is to pass measures that will restrict the freedoms that they think they are seeking and will find here. But here we have a legislator who wants to use her powers to enact laws to target conservative individuals with whom she disagrees, take away their freedoms and liberties, and all in the hopes that the citizens she is oppressing might move away from their state. Can you say tyranny? If conservative legislators have written a blog post targeting the freedoms of gays or minorities and women, the mainstream media will go nuts. But here we have an elected official suggesting that government be used in the United States of America to eliminate freedoms of certain citizens in order to gain political control, and not a peep out of the media. Sounds like tyranny, indeed. I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. And we are very pleased to have with us today Mr. Mason Weaver. Mr. Weaver is going to be speaking at the St. Charles County Pachyderms this Friday evening, and we're thrilled to death to have him there. This is Mr. Weaver is just an incredibly interesting man. He's done probably just about everything that you can do as a human being. He's been an author, a private business entrepreneur, spokesman, conference speaker, lecturer, motivational role model, a columnist, a congressional candidate. He's hosted a radio talk show, and he's been a contributor on various radio or various cable news networks, including Fox. And we're just thrilled to death to have him with us today. Welcome, Mr. Weaver.
Thank you for the welcome. I really appreciate that.
Well, Mr. Weaver, you will be speaking at the St. Charles County Pachyderm installation dinner on Friday. And if folks want to have more information about how to get in touch with that event, you can go to Facebook, and I'll give you the website later on in the interview. But let's talk a little bit about your background. You now live in Missouri. You are a longtime resident of California. You've done a great many things. You've been in the service. And what brought you to the position that you are today?
The truth. You know, if you seek the truth, sometimes that's a frightening journey. Because when you seek the truth, anything, you are exposing yourself to realize that you have been fooled. And you have been, it's kind of embarrassing. So people sometimes shy away from the truth. When I left Missouri in 1916, I joined the Navy on the same day Dr. King was murdered, April the 4th, 1968. In a place of turmoil, I was living in a very rural community south of St. Louis and Jefferson County, and I was struck with who I was. And everyone was trying to tell me who I was, and I had to go there and find out who I was. That journey from a young, black, athletic young man into the Navy, went to Vietnam, came back, and I was injured by a shipmate who tried to kill me. because of the color of my skin. He's got a ton of half of steel on me. And all of a sudden, this young, athletic, 21-year-old black man was unskilled. I had no training. I couldn't do anything I was trained to do because I broke my back, basically. And I hated white people because of one white guy, because I was tired of, it was the last straw. It wasn't just one incident. It was the last straw. And I went out and I tried to find other angry black men because we hang out with people that think like we think. We hang out with folks who encourage our belief system. And we abandon all logic and we focus ourselves on people who've been abused or people who want to play basketball or people who want to be a Democrat or Republican, and we hang out. And at Berkeley, I've been a radical militant, speaking Swahili and wearing dashiki and Black Power salute, hanging on the Black Panther Party, I began to think about who I was in history. You cannot think and stay liberal. You cannot think and stay lost. You cannot think and stay depressed. Because if you think, you will see clearly the way to success in every venture you're in. What happened to me was I had to find who I was and who I was in charge with. That led to a belief and understanding that I am a conservative person, that I have confidence in my ability to take care of myself and my family. And that realization changed my thought pattern. It changed my friends. It changed my approach to business. It changed my approach to success. And now, 40 years later, I'm returning back to Missouri because now I understand what success is. It's me.
So you were motivated, really pretty much, you're pull yourself up by your own bootstraps kind of guy. You're motivated just for success.
That's the only way you can do it. I'm not going to stop and bend my back to pull you up. Nobody's going to do that unless they want you to come up and help them. Opportunities to succeed is a group battle. We go out and band together, go fight the enemy, try to destroy us. So once the battle is won, you're responsible for your avenue for success. And I'm responsible for my avenue for success. We may have different avenues. So me and Lisa band together and fight the enemy. But when the war is over, you go back to do what you're doing, and I'll go back to doing what I'm doing. And what that does is develop a culture of success. I will applaud you, and you will applaud me. But if I have to depend on you to help me, if I fall down on the ground, I got a bad back and bad knees. If I fall down, Lisa, and you and I are walking somewhere, and I fall down, and you stop to help me, we've both been stopped. Because now you got to bend your back to help me. I got to reach up and grab your hand, and it's easier for me to get up by myself, actually, than you to stop and help me.
Right. Well, Mr. Weaver, we live in a culture now that for generations and generations we have been conditioned to become more dependent on the government and more dependent on somebody else to help us up. How are you being received with that message? Because that's really the conservative, you know, the vocal minority of conservatives are trying to get back to that, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you know, personal responsibility message. How are you being received there?
Excellent question. I'm so glad you asked me how I am being received. Really, honestly.
Because truth hurts.
No, but actually, who gives a fat rat's behind? Really? Do you really care how people who are against you perceive you? If we stop caring about that question, how are we being perceived by the enemy? Are you kidding me? You think in Vietnam I cared how the Viet Cong perceived me? Do you think my father cared about the Japanese in the jungle perceiving? Folks, we got to stop caring about people trying to destroy our culture. They're trying to destroy our nation, our heritage. And we're caring about if they have a perception. I'm going to tell you about liberals. I was a good liberal. Liberals call a fake face. They call you a name because it gets you to stop discussing the facts. It gets you to stop debating with the truth. The truth is like a brick to a liberal's head. So they perceive you as a racist, mean-spirited, hateful. And guess what you start doing? You start discussing the facts about taxes, the facts about gun control, the facts about the economy and about budgets. And you start defending yourself personally. I'm not racist, I'm not mean. And now you're off the subject. You're back on the emotions, which is where they rule at. So, yes, I'm a black, Republican, conservative, Christian with an attitude. And most folks don't like me, And that's fine with me because I'd rather be right than be liked.
Well, okay, so let's go down another road here. Okay, so there is a movement out there who shares your sentiments. You know, you've got to pick up and just move forward and not stop worrying about being politically corrected, as we've been politically corrected for a very long time. But there are folks within our movement also who are not there for the right reasons. You know, they are really, you know, we have a tendency to idolize our elected and to turn them into rock stars, and we want to put them on a pedestal. So how do we deal with those folks that are within our own movement who may have conservative values, but they're really there to...
I don't know if they have conservative values if they just say it. But to go back to that question, how are you perceived? The fact of the matter is, an elected official, we as conservatives or as Christians, we will preach righteousness, moral values, culture, but we will judge perfection. If you're not perfect, we will eat you alive. If Newt Gingrich has an affair, we will eat him alive. But Bill Clinton can rape a woman and become the spokesperson for the Democratic Party. We will see Jesse Jackson bring his pregnant girlfriend into the White House and proclaim him the spokesperson of the black community. But Herm Cain can have an accusation from a woman.
Right.
We will stop him like a hot potato. So we preach righteousness and we just affection because the reason we just affection is because we don't want to be perceived as being hypocritical. So we allow our enemies to decide if we're being fair. We allow our opposition to decide if we are being logical. And I'm saying forget about it. You're not going to find a perfect candidate. You're not going to find a perfect official. But you're going to have perfect understanding of your cultural values. I don't care if the cop coming to rescue me it broke up with his wife. I don't care if the ambulance driver coming to give me aid had an affair with his girlfriend. I don't care. I care if you can do your job. And we should think about our politicians and hold them to our values when they're offline of those values. Redirect them. Don't kill them. Don't eat them. Don't eat your wounded. But redirect them. That's what you should be doing.
So a little bit of reformation in the culture.
Yes, we have to be leading the culture. See, the type of government we have, we're kind of off talking now. The type of government we have, the Constitution, is not a group of laws. The Constitution is a foundation from which the laws spring. And the Constitution is ordained, established, and written by the people to control the government. There is nothing in the Constitution controlling you or I. It is all about controlling the government. So we should not have, we're not established to have the government dictate or even lead us or influence us. We don't have the government putting pressure on us for laws. It was the people putting pressure on government that brought about the Revolutionary War. It was the people putting pressure on government that brought about the Civil War. It was the people marching for women's suffrage. It was the people marching against the Vietnam War. It was the people demanding that government respond to their needs. But today, we have a government demanding we accept health care reform. We have the government actually debating gun control. Well, we're not demanding gun control. They're acting like they're tribal chiefs now. They're acting like they're all our leaders. We are their leaders. And we no longer understand the Constitution. We would debate church and state. We would debate whether I need a gun. Another grown man is going to tell me he can decide what kind of gun I need to take my family. That's insane.
So what would your advice be to the grassroots revolution to pick up those that cultural attitude and move forward and be stronger, you know, in directing their elected?
Know who you are, know where you're going, and do not let anything get you off track. You will be offensive. The very activity, if you go to the promised land, I don't know if you're a Christian or not, but if you go to where you need to be, trust me, someone else is already there. When you go for a job interview, trust me, someone else also who wants that job. If you like that guy, think that girl is cute, trust me, somebody else likes that person. And if you're going to get that person, you're saying, I am better than you. You're saying, I do this job better than you do this job. You can't worry about your perception or to think you're mean. You need this job to take care of your family. And we need this country to be based on constitutional principles for our kids. And I don't care if a little left doesn't like it to call me mean or call me names. Can you imagine the names I'm called in my family, in my culture, at the barbershop, at church, because of my stance? That doesn't matter to me. What matters is my two little granddaughters. What kind of world they're going to inherit it? What kind of schooling they're going to have? That is all I care about. And we conservatives had better get a backbone. We're letting the children lead us. We're letting the children influence us. We don't want to be called mean by our kids. So we give the kids the car they can't even drive. We've got a president that has not led anything, but we're too afraid to be called a name by saying he is incompetent. But he is. So I suggest that all your listeners know what they stand for. And stand for it, not fall for it.
Okay, so let's switch gears just a little bit. Okay, you mentioned children before, and for generations we've been politically corrected. We've been conditioned to kind of be in the place that we are, and it's not a good place. It was not the right choice for us to make as individuals to acquiesce. So how do we the left has been very effective in indoctrinating children in their ways through our schools. You know, in our culture. So what's your suggestion for dealing with that on that level, with trying to bring that kind of idea back to our children and into that culture?
Let me get a little rash.
Okay.
I've been known to be, I'm like the Sherman tank. I'm loud, I'm aggressive, and it's hard to hide me on the battlefield because I want to win. Folks, if you give your kids to the new left to educate, and let them tax you 40% of your income to train your kids, they will train your kids to hate you. They will train your kids to love them. You can't expect your children to go to public schools and love your country when they graduate. So we have to first stop that. And what we do now, what they do, we think that there is a negotiation. I had to tell a teacher once who told me that she was a partner in my child's education. I said, did we have a baby together? You're not my partner. You're an employee. Your job is to teach my child ABC and 1, 2, 3. You're not here to discuss social activities. It's my job.
Right.
And when they propose these crazy concepts, instead of saying you are fired, we negotiate. When they wanted, in California, they had homosexual month, and we negotiated. Like Black History Month. Another crazy concept. And we allow the left to come to us as if they are equal to us in our decision. They're not, folks. They're not capable. So I suggest your listeners do, once again, be aggressive. To be a warrior is an offensive position. There's a difference between a warrior and a diplomat. And sometimes it's a little too diplomatic. The UN will never declare war because the UN is full of diplomats. They think war is failure. They will always say, let sanctions work. They will always say, let's negotiate a little bit more. And compromise is victory for the UN. But when compromises stop and negotiations stop, the diplomats pack up and leave the country because they know the military is coming. And the military does not negotiate. The military takes the ground and keep it. We had better decide if we're diplomatic or if we're militaristic. We have been under attack for generations. They've taken our children. They've taken our culture. They now got kids. When I was a kid, the vampires were the bad guys. Now they got vampires marrying women, and they're cute, and they're sexy. We're going nuts because we are quiet. We are afraid. We are ashamed of the truth. We are ashamed of being right. It's time that, if you're going to be right, you have to be right in the light.
Absolutely.
Well, that's just a taste of what you're going to hear on Friday at the St. Charles County Pachyderms Installation Dinner at the Stegton Regency. You can get more information about that on Facebook and at www.sccpachydermclub.org. And, Mr. Weaver, how can we follow you?
I am the easiest creature in the world to give money to. You can follow me, MasonWeaver.com, ClarenceAMason.com, my book, my new book, Tribalism, TheBook.com, Facebook, Twitter, do a Google, you can find me, you can find my books, my speeches. I have truth, and I have real trouble.
Well, before we sign off, let's talk a little bit about your book, Tribalism.
Well, Tribalism is my attempt. You know, my first book was called It's Okay to Leave the Plantation. I laid out a history of the plantation system, not blacks and white folks, but the system of plantation, which is the same system, the same spirit of feudalism, the same spirit of serfdom. It is the spirit that says one man will control the wealth and production of another man. And today, since slavery is over, we still have slaves acting the same way in America. So tribalism, I try to get a different approach. Tribalism is a novel, my first novel. It's about a 14-year-old gangbanger, a thug. He wants to be a gangbanger. He goes to rob a store, and he is shot running across the field. And he wakes up 150 years back in the past doing slavery. He has now been shot by slave hunters trying to escape the plantation. He still remembers the future, and the people on the plantation think he's a prophet now because since he's been shot, he's been talking about the future like he's been there. And he learns the lessons of why black men treat their women so bad. He learns lessons about why we have a hard time working, why is it difficult for us, why we wear our hats sideways and crooked and our pants sagging, why we get the tattoos. And he learns the lessons. He learns respect black women when he's led to freedom by Harriet Tubman. He learns respect for white folks. He learns who's operating the safe houses. He gets free and learns to respect himself when he meets Frederick Douglass. And all of the book is entwined with lessons and history. And why do we eat chitlins on New Year's Day? There's a reason why. And all those things and why our diet is designed for black men to be strong at 18. We dominate every sport you can think of, football, baseball, dancing, singing, but die at retirement because you don't want to feed a retired slave. So we work all our life and die before we get Social Security, and Social Security goes to the person who lives the longest, white women. We're still working for the white man. And that book describes a dozen tendencies within the black community. And I invite your listeners to get it. It is on e-books right now, but it's not hard copy because it's too big of a book to print. They can get it on e-book.
Okay, great. And we can go to masonweaver.com and learn more about that. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Weaver. We really appreciate you being on the air with us today, and I'm looking very forward to meeting you on Friday.
Thank you. Stay right or be left. We're going to freedom.
Very good. Thank you. Mason Weaver, masonweaver.com.
I just love that guy. What a message. I just love listening to him talk, and we just need more people to talk straight like that. So looking forward to meeting him on Friday. You can go to St. Charles County Pachyderm on Facebook and visit us at our website, which I'll have to get back to you on that one. I don't have it written down. But anyway, masonweaver.com, great guy. He's a St. Louis native now, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more from him in the future. Let's take a real quick break, and we'll come back with Greg Jeffrey from Gateway Civil Liberties Alliance. Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and you're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We're here every Wednesday night at 7. Thrilled to death to be here with you. We have a good lineup of programming throughout the week, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on. Do kind of want to mention our Secret Santa situation. Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families across the state of Missouri in 2012. We set a goal to raise $500 to be able to go out and pay off layaway accounts for various families across the state who had toys that they weren't going to be able to get out of layaway in time for Christmas. And we were able to help 15 families because not only did we raise $500, we actually raised $1,000 through the generosity of the grassroots movement. People just, you know, we had a couple of large donors. We had a lot of small donors. Just pocket change was great, and we raised a lot of money and helped a lot of people. Our goal for 2013 is to raise $2,000. We want to double that number in 2013, and we need to double that number because the Obama administration doesn't like charity. You know, go figure. If they have, if folks have charity and they're not relying on the government, then that's going to weaken the power of the government. So send us money so that we can help folks at Christmas time. We'll be talking to you throughout the year. It's not too early to donate to the Secret Santa Project here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition. So go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab there. You can send us, like we said, money through PayPal, check, or money order. We'll take it any way we can get it, and we appreciate your help with that project. While you're there at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, join as a member. Our goal here, this organization aims to independently unite the grassroots movement. There are grassroots groups all across the state with very independent-minded pet projects and goals and directives. We're not interested in changing your directive. What we want to do is that we want to have a united voice in our government in Jefferson City, and we want to be able to say with great strength that, you know, we're 10,000 patriots strong here, and when we want to pass something like right to work or any other, you know, gun rights legislation or Agenda 21 legislation, we want to be able to go to the legislature in Jefferson City and say, you know, we've got 10, 20,000 patriots who are all behind this initiative. Maybe it's your pet project. Maybe it's your pet. Maybe you have goals in your individual group that you need help with. Come to us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Network through us. Let us help you promote your ideas and your issues. That's what we're here for. So go to the Join tab. It's next to the Secret Santa tab on the website. Give us your information so that we can network with you and you can network with us, and we can work together as a unified group. Last week, a friend of mine sent me this article, and it's kind of appropriate, and I don't want to appear as a conspiracy theorist person, but, you know, just in the last 6 months, if you've been watching what's been going on in the Obama administration with the Benghazi issue, and if you've ever watched the situations going on with Fast and Furious, and I mean, everything that happens is just absolutely, it's like you can't write this stuff, you know, it's like it's out of a movie. It's just craziness. So a friend of mine sent me this article. It's in naturalnews.com, and it's about a prominent rifle manufacturer killed in mysterious car crash days after posting psych drug link to school shooters. And he goes on to say, and there's been a lot of debate in the media about, you know, how are we going to deal with this gun issue? You know, of course the Obama administration would like to disarm us all, but, you know, there's been a lot of debate about dealing with the psych drugs and all of these crazy people that are going out with, you know, guns and shooting people. So anyway, the author of this blog post goes on to say that, you know, he doesn't want to appear as a conspiracy theorist either, but he tells a story about John Novesk is one of the most celebrated battle rifle manufacturers in Missouri. Sadly, John Novesk was killed in a mysterious car crash just a few days ago on January 4th, 2013. And according to the October Wire, his car traveled across an oncoming lane into the dirt highway shoulder until it struck two large boulders, and he was ejected from the vehicle and died on impact. Barely a week before the incident, John Novesk posted a lengthy, detailed post on Facebook that listed all the school shootings tied to psychiatric drugs. At the end of the post, he asked, "What drug was Adam Lanza on?" That was the last post that he ever made. So, and he goes on to talk a little bit more about this, you know, about this kind of coincidence. You know, he's kind of calling it a coincidence. He wasn't the first prominent gun rights supporter to be killed in the last few days. Keith Ratliff, the creator of super popular YouTube channel featuring videos of exotic weapons, was also recently found dead. And then he goes on to list, beyond coincidence, pieces of the puzzle rapidly coming together, and talks about, sure, a car crash involving John Novesk could be a coincidence. It could also be a coincidence that no video footage has been released from Sandy Hook showing Adam Lanza carrying a rifle, any rifle whatsoever. It might also be a coincidence that Dianne Feinstein just happened to have her detailed gun confiscation bill ready to release immediately following the Sandy Hook shooting. And I'm telling you, folks, I mean, that's true. I mean, that was awfully quick, and we know that the Obamacare was, you know, over 2,000-page bill was pushed through the legislature, drafted and pushed through the legislature pretty quick as well. So you kind of have to wonder, when we live in a culture that has got the attitude never let a good crisis go to waste, you just kind of wonder if it wasn't sitting there waiting for something to happen to it. So anyway, as this article goes on, he lists the names of 20 or more incidences of people involved in school shootings and the drugs that all of these people were on when they committed their crimes. Anyway, just interesting reading, not saying one thing or another, you know, not saying it's not coming to any conclusion one way or another, just another interesting coincidence to watch. I will post it up at Missouri Grassroots Coalition Facebook page just for your general information. But, you know, you just kind of have to wonder sometimes. And speaking of the gun issue, today President Obama signed into effect 23 executive orders. It just keeps getting worse and worse. We have with us today Greg Jeffrey from Gateway Civil Liberties Alliance. And I actually did talk to Steve Marks earlier, the president of the organization. We had a great interview, and through technical difficulties, which are my fault, I was not able to upload that interview for you, but Greg Jeffrey was gracious enough to come on with us at the very last minute and fill in for him, and hopefully we'll have Steve Marks next week, because, folks, from what I've been able to learn about this organization in just the few days that I've known about it, these folks are firecrackers. I mean, they are really on fire for your gun rights. They monitor legislation. They're organized in a way to try to inform the public about what you need to know about your gun rights. And we're here to talk to Greg tonight a little bit about your organization. Thanks for being with us, Greg.
Well, thanks for having me. Of course, after that lead-in, I'm wondering whether I should actually be on the phone or heading for the hills.
Well,
I don't want to have a car accident.
Well, you know, I mean, people will say it's you need to adjust the tinfoil hat because you're a little out, and conspiracy theory, but, you know, I mean, if you look at all of the things, not just gun issues, but all the things gone on in our government in the last year.
Yeah, and I got to apologize to you because it seems that once you got me on here, I'm suddenly having technical difficulties hearing you. You're cutting in and out. I don't know if you can hear me fine.
Great. Okay. So if we lose it, we'll try to get you back. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, but again, it's cutting in and out, and I'm getting, you know, probably two-thirds of what you're saying.
Well, let's get into things real quickly here. Tell us a little bit about your organization.
Well, Gateway Civil Liberties Alliance basically had been around for going on 10 years. Was very active in pushing the license to carry law. In fact, I was the legislative chairman at the time that the law was written and the law was passed. Recently stepped back into the legislative advisor position, especially with all the stuff that is you've been talking about happening at the federal level. Watching this happen over the last 2 years, really, it wasn't a surprise that Feinstein had a bill ready to go. We'd already had indication that they'd actually been working on something for 2 years. They were just looking for the prime opportunity to bring it out and push it on the American people. Aurora was close to being the one that they were talking about using, but didn't turn out to have the traction that they thought they needed, so they held it back. And then when you saw what happened in Newtown, then that's why you saw the language so far prepared and almost done. It wasn't something that they ginned up overnight. They've actually been working on it for a long time. Gateway Civil Liberties Alliance, though, is St. Louis based. We're part of an overall group that blankets Missouri to push the pro-gun agenda and look out for your rights. We work with the Missouri Sports Shooting Association as well as the Western Missouri Shoot Alliance out of Kansas City. So between the three organizations, we are pretty effective at covering the whole state.
Excellent. And I just found out about this today. I don't know how recent this is. I think it's pretty new. You and I talked a little earlier on the phone. There's a bill, HB 170.
Yeah. But, again, I thought earlier when we talked about you'd mentioned 170, I said 70. I'm online right now, and HB 170 is a different bill. The one that deals with teachers being armed is HB 70, sponsored by Representative Kelly. He's the first one, but there's a list of co-sponsors on it. And basically, this bill would modify the prohibited places for licensed carry holders. And if there was a teacher or school administrator that has a license to carry, if this bill passes, they will be able to carry in school.
Awesome. And how does the Gateway Civil Liberties Alliance feel about that?
Well, we're cautiously optimistic about the bill. The one thing you have to understand is there's a big difference between what gets pre-filed and what gets finally passed. So half the trick is getting it not only out of the pre-file stage, but actually heard by committee and then making it through the whole process of the House to the Senate and getting it to the governor's desk to be signed without having any nasty amendments. I fully expect that you're going to have school board associations show up to talk about how they can't trust their teachers and how you got to be afraid of the teachers and, you know, that this is a crazy idea that if you allow a teacher to be armed in school, wild mischief would occur. It's basically the same arguments that we heard for the 13 years that we argued for allowing honest citizens to carry on the street. And if anybody had stopped to notice, we argued for it for 13 years. This year is our 10th anniversary of having that law in effect. And the Wild West didn't occur. The people who got the permits didn't go out and turn accidents into shootouts, arguments into shootouts. It's the same response from them no matter what the subject, and we're going to be calmly pointing out again that, well, I think we've already proven those arguments to be false. We think that you probably can trust your teachers just as much as you can trust the people who go and get a license to carry, and we've proven ourselves for 10 years to be law-abiding and responsible.
Absolutely. Well, the academic world is going to have to figure out which side of the fence they want to be on, because I do follow a lot of legislation, education legislation, and they're always, you know, touting. And as far as I can remember, it's about trusting your teachers. We're good people. We're responsible. So all of a sudden, they're not going to be responsible when it comes to guns. I don't think so.
Yes, and that's one of the arguments that anybody who is for self-defense needs to keep in mind, is if you watch carefully what happens, even in the president's own speech today when he unveiled 23 nebulous proposals through executive order, and I'm still trying to find the exact wording. Everything I've been able to find is just summaries and top-level descriptions. And so the real impact is going to be determined from what is, you know, with the dotted I's, crossed T's, where the commas are, and what he is really trying to do. So I'd tell everybody to sit tight and let us analyze exactly what he did put out today. But when you listen to what he said and you listen to what they say, they try to have their cake and eat it too. They want to say that you can trust the teachers, but then turn right around and say you can't trust the teachers. And what it really is that they firmly believe that guns are bad. I take most of them at their word when they say that they think bad things would happen. What we have to do is be the calm adults in the room and point out that, yes, we understand your fear, but if you look at the reality of the world around you, your fear is baseless. Part of what happened in Sandy Hook kind of points that out, and that is the fact that almost every public school in the nation practices what's called lockdown. Why do they do that? It's because they know that there's a chance that there's going to be an intruder that shows up with intent to do bodily harm to the children at that school. So they already have a pre-knowledge that this is a possibility, yet what weapons do they put in the school to defend the children? It's the sign that says, don't come here, which I think we've had ample proof forever that signs are just ignored by the people who want to harm people. They have security cameras, which, as you mentioned in one of your lead-ins here, all it does is provide video, sometimes gruesome video, that you can watch afterward and try and determine who did what. They have the lockdown procedure itself, which has also not been proven to be very effective because essentially you try to control entry, and then once they're there, the technique is basically you take the kids, put them in the room, and lock them in there, and then you wait for help. The final tool that everybody is given and they're told that they need to use is the phone. And when you grab that phone and you call for help, who are you calling? Are you calling the mayor? Are you calling the JCs? Are you calling the Boy Scouts? No, you're calling the guys who are going to show up with the guns. Because everybody instinctively knows that you need someone who can commit violence on the people who are there trying to commit violence on you in order to stop it. So as the chief of police of St. Louis County, Adley, pointed out, we have to come up with something to allow teachers, administrators to protect the students in the 5 to 10 minutes it takes once that person breaches the school grounds to when they can show up. And one of the things that they really ought to consider, so I'll take the president at his word, he said that we should consider all measures, and if it would save one life, it would be worth it. So maybe we should consider allowing teachers who get training, get qualified, take a little tactical course on how to defend their classroom, and allow them the option to carry.
How many lives would have been saved at Sandy Hook if there had been an armed person inside that school?
If the principal had been armed, probably all of them. Because as the story that I heard, she was the first one to confront him. And what tool did she have at hand to resist him? Her hands. She had to try and close a distance on an armed intruder and try to take him down with her body. And that actually is a crime because, you know, they knew that it was a possibility, and yet the law of Connecticut said they couldn't have anything other than the cell phone, an attempt to physically wrestle the guy. So that's the real tragedy of what happened up there. They knew it was a possibility, and yet nothing was done to physically allow those brave adults that tried to do what they could to defend those kids with anything other than hands, fists, and maybe throw in some books.
Right. And all of that gave birth to 23 executive orders today.
Mm-hmm. 23 executive orders. So far, again, the summaries of what he's put out, I'm holding reservation on it because we've got to see what the dotted I's and crossed T's are. The call for the renewal of the assault weapon ban is not really a surprise to anybody. And again, it's another example of how they try to have their cake and eat it too, because in his own speech, he talks about how effective it was at preventing crime, and yet then in the very next sentence complains about how the manufacturers got around and made them anyway. well, wait a minute. If it prevented crime, but they made them anyway, you're not making any sense.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, the whole argument for trying to ban law-abiding private citizens in the tens of millions of the quantity that we are, 100 million, however many we are that actually own AR-15s, trying to go after them is senseless. The people have done nothing wrong with this rifle that they have, and yet somehow we're supposed to be to blame for when a crazy guy goes into school and shoots it up.
Any sense? Well, hopefully we're going to put a stick in the eye of the federal government, because today I found out about another bill, HB 170, which is basically a nullification bill. Basically, what it says, it's a short bill. It says, you know, anybody who tries to enforce the federal restriction of the Second Amendment, that's a felony. So, of course, I on that bill as well to make help
that. That was HB 170?
Yeah. And on its face, legislators so far. Yada, 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 to enforce or to attempt to enforce any act, law, statute, rule, or regulation of the federal government relating to a personal firearm, firearm accessory, or ammunition that is owned or manufactured commercially or privately in the state of Missouri that remains exclusively within the boundaries of the state of Missouri.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just pulled that one up while you were talking about it. That's the one that is mirroring after Wyoming and Montana.
Do you have any history on how it's been there?
Say again, you're breaking up again. My apologies.
Oh, do you have any history on how it's worked in Wyoming or Montana?
Well, it hasn't really been tested, and there are pitfalls in the proposal that they suggested there. I applaud them making the attempt. But I'd rather not give any ideas that the government might not have thought of yet on how to defeat it, but there are some areas that it would need to be strengthened.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, a Class D felony in Missouri is 2 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
The interpretation of the judge, which is a little scary because, you know, I'm not sure that's a good thing, leaving the interpretation up to the judges. That's not really helpful, I think.
It would depend on where you're at and which judge is involved. As we all are painfully familiar with the Supreme Court challenge for license to carry.
Yeah, we kind of really want something a little more solid, I'm thinking.
But, again, it's a pre-filed bill. That's where you start. It has to work the process, and it could be amended to clean up anything that we don't like or strengthen it based on the experience of the other two states that are trying it.
Well, Greg Jeffrey, you have just been a godsend today with your information. I really appreciate you coming on at the last minute. We hope to have you and Steve Marks on again soon. I think your website is GCLA.org.
No, it's GCLASTL.org. You have to put the STL on it or you're going to go somewhere else. And we're going to try and put some updates on the website as they become available when we get an analysis on the 23 executive orders and presidential memorandums. That'll go up there, so encourage everybody to check out the website.
And it's my understanding you will also be soon creating a Facebook page.
Yes, that was discussed at our board meeting the other night.
The sooner the better, because we would love to have you in our alliance here at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. We love the information and the whole philosophy. So thank you so much for being with us tonight, Greg.
All right. Thanks for having me.
We're going to take another quick break, and then we're going to come back with Liz Trent.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Okay, we're back. And as we said, you know, we're going to continue to watch this legislation as time goes by to make sure that we can keep on track of where things go. This nullification bill on this egregious action from the federal government could be worthwhile, and we're going to watch this other HB 70 to see if that goes anywhere as well. So we'll keep you updated as time goes by. With us tonight, you know, I don't know if you've noticed the message here tonight a little bit. You know, is you know, you got to stop paying attention to the spin of the other side, and you've got to start just picking up and moving forward. And we have with us tonight Liz Trent of SpiritOfResistance.org and Reject Dawa at rejectdawa.blogspot.com and spiritofresistance.blogspot.com. I'll get it straight. Thanks for being with us, Liz.
Hi, thanks for having me.
A little tongue-tied here. Okay, you sent me some amazing videos this week, and you're absolutely right. You know, we've got to stop being politically corrected. We've been politically corrected to think the wrong thing, and which is what gives the other side power to change our culture. So what have you got for us tonight?
Well, I want to talk about a couple of things, and the first thing I want to talk about is a little bit in the same line as your last guest. I sent you a link, and it talks about a quote from Al-Qaeda, where they have said that they have the right to kill 4 million Americans, 2 million of them children, and to exile twice as many and wound and cripple hundreds of thousands. And I would say it's my opinion that you can't get guns into the hands of our teachers fast enough for me, because I feel it's probably only a matter of time before we have a terrorist attack at one of our schools.
Oh, now, wait a minute here, Liz. Islam is a religion of peace.
Well, if you're a Muslim, you might feel peaceful, but if you're a non-Muslim, it's anything but peaceful.
Okay, so let's talk about the technicality there, because, I mean, until somebody explained it to me, I didn't understand either, you know?
Right.
If you follow the Quran, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I've got the general idea, the Quran states that the definition of peace to the Nation of Islam or in the Islamic faith is everybody following Islam. And that's
exactly that's right. And this is a supremacist ideology. I mean, there's two types of people. There's the Muslims and the non-Muslims. We have the Ummah, which is the Muslim world, and then we have the West. And if you're the West, you know, you're a target for conquest. And that is really the ultimate goal of Islam, is to overthrow and to conquer the world. So that's what that's all about.
And that's not really that's not the message that we've had the last 10 years.
Well, there's this little thing called the Qiyya, and it's a little rule in the Sharia law, which is based completely on Islam. It's the theocracy that goes with Islam, and you know, they have the right to deceive, they have the right to lie to you, they don't have to tell you the truth, and that's part of the program. And it's sort of up to us to learn it, understand it. And it really is our duty, it's our responsibility to draw a line in the sand. I don't mean to be a joke, but to draw a line and say, okay, now wait a minute. We have our own culture based on the Ten Commandments, Judeo-Christian values, and the Golden Rule, right? Do unto others as you would have done unto you, right? So why would we then invite foreign ideas to come into our communities, and then allow them to have a platform to then deceive or coerce or manipulate our citizens? I mean, that's our duty as a free society to self-govern. We have to watch for these things, and we have to be aware of them and tell others, and we have to pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. I mean, if you're watching the news at all, or if you're it's not on the news. If you're on the internet at all and you're seeing the stories about the things that are going on in places like Dearborn, Michigan, and other parts of the country where, I mean, there is a serious attack of Islam, the people of Islam seriously attacking the culture in these cities and totally destroying them. And they have no respect for the American culture whatsoever. They are really there to take it over. And while, yeah, you know, a lot of people say, well, but I know peaceful Muslims. Well, maybe you do know peaceful Muslims, but when push comes to shove, their religion teaches that they must follow Allah.
Yeah, it's an order. It's compulsory. And again, Islam follows along the same lines as communism and fascism. It's a process. It's a process of conquest. And so you might know a peaceful Muslim who might be in a different part of the process. Maybe his jihad is to send money to the actual terrorist, or maybe his job is to deceive your neighborhood and make you think that all Muslims are like him, and so you should invite more, certainly. But we can look over and over again at the history, which we have a right to do. We can look at the bloody history of Islamic conquest, and we can find, just like Jesus taught us to judge people by their actions, we should trust our own judgment, look at the history and see what really happens. We don't have to go far. We can look at Belgium today. And in Belgium, a woman who is actually a Muslim, she's a moderate Muslim, went into her community and she wrote a book called Undercover in Little Morocco. And what she found was that the Muslim youth were being radicalized in her community via Arabic TV, which was pumping a lot of, you know, pretty hateful propaganda to her community.
And, you know, if people aren't really following it, they just don't understand. I mean, it is absolutely radical.
Propaganda has resulted in their community having difficulty with the local Muslim population not following the laws of Belgium, not being respectful of the people who live there in the community. And, you know, they are adopting this sort of supremacist attitude, supremacist ideology that Islam promotes, the radical forms of Islam. And so, you know, it's disrupting their whole culture. It's undermining. In France, you know, we've had no-go zones. In England, we've got Sharia law courts and no-go zones. And, you know, I think Dearborn is going to be the first no-go zone in the United States. But, you know, a lot of it starts first by propagandizing the youth. And this is why I wanted to come on the show today, to tell you that we have an imam who is known to be quite radical. It's easy to prove. His speech, his conversations are meant to stir the ummah to action, and he says very hateful things. He's coming to Baldwin, Missouri to do a fundraiser.
When's he going to be here? What's his name?
He's coming on February 2nd, and his name is Khalid Yashin. He has been exposed in Australia as committing some fraud concerning he was trying to start an FM channel, which was going to be very similar to the concern we have about Al Jazeera, which is the same problem they have in Belgium, is that this sort of Arabic mass media that then pumps in this sort of really nasty stuff to the Muslim youth of the you know, the country that it's in. And he's coming, and his speeches are very anti-West, very hateful. I've put several of his videos on my blog. He's very anti-Israel, and he's claiming to have a certain credentials academically, which has turned out to be false. And he's actually an American convert. He's originally from New York. But, you know, there's even a video where he's giving his speech with the black flag of jihad. This is the conquest, Islamic conquest flag. And I would find it, you know, completely inappropriate that this particular man should be allowed to bring these types of ideas, which are right along the lines of Al-Qaeda, which go right along with the Islamic doctrine. And he would be coming not only to give a speech to the youth at the mosque, but to raise money.
Absolutely. So it you know, it just kind of boggles the mind. It's like, where do you go with this? What do you do with it?
Well, here's what you do. You know what? it's your community. It's the community of Baldwin. I believe it's St. Louis County. It's your state. It's the state of Missouri. The people in that state and in your county, they have the right to choose the values and the ideas that they want to promote in their community. This man does not promote the same ideas that we want for our children, for the future, for our culture. There's no golden rule here. There's no treating others. There's no assimilation here. What we have here is a man that's easily proved to give very hate-filled speeches. So what we do is we decide as a community we don't want to allow this person in the county. And you have the right to say no. And just like Mason Weaver taught us, we don't care what names they call us. They can call us all kinds of names. We have the evidence. We have the reports. We have his speeches. We can hear what he's saying. We can read Islamic doctrine on our own. And we can say no thank you. We have our own culture. No thank you.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, you just said a word that I haven't heard in a while. It's assimilation. You know, when people come to this country, America is America. You know, we have our culture, we have our rules, we have our boundaries, we have our structure, and we expect you to assimilate. And people don't talk about that anymore. People don't talk about people foreign people when they come into America are not expected to assimilate into our culture anymore. We adapt to them. Got to stop that.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have to remember that there's a lot of smart people. For example, in 2004, we found, I've told you before, all the archives of the Muslim Brotherhood, you know, in Virginia, we found all these. They were used in the Holy Land Foundation trial. So we know there are people here specifically tasked with overthrowing the culture, specifically tasked to lull us to sleep with these sort of ridiculous ideas like coexistence, where, you know, you have your religion, I have mine, and I'm going to, Dar al-Islam Mosque in Baldwin actually means the land of Islam. You know, it's not. It's Missouri. It's really not the land of Islam. It really is Missouri, and the Missourians can really decide which values they want to uphold and which values they don't want to uphold. And it's really the choice of the community. It's just that the community has to sort of snap out of that idea that, you know, they have no choice. They certainly do.
Yeah, we all have choices. Okay, so Liz, we can go to rejectdawah.blogspot.com to see these videos?
Correct.
And spiritofresistance.blogspot.com?
Yes, but the videos about this particular speaker are at rejectdawah.blogspot.com. And I've also posted the emails of the officials there in Baldwin City. And I would just say people really need to inform their neighbors and talk to each other. And then, you know, there has to be a decision made to figure out how you're going to say no to this type of propaganda.
Absolutely. Okay, thanks, Liz, for that information. It's very
You're welcome.
Get involved and engaged out there in your community in Baldwin and maybe and beyond, because it's not going to stop there. And you're right. We have the right to say no. We're not used to doing it. We've been politically corrected and conditioned for a long time to just accept all of these things that are coming in. But you need to educate yourself on the reality of what it is, folks, and then you need to contact your elected.
And I was going to add one more thing, Lisa, before I say goodbye. In Italy, Islam is not recognized as a religion. They do not enjoy tax-exempt status. So I'm just letting you know that there's at least one country out there that has realized that Islam is mostly a political ideology, and these are choices that other communities have made, and like you said, we can do it too.
Okay, very good. Liz Trent, Reject Dawah, it's DAWAH, .blogspot.com. Thanks, Liz. We hope you come on again soon.
Okay, thanks, Lisa. Bye.
Bye. Okay, we're going to take another quick break, and we're going to come back and talk to David Workman about his latest novel.
This is the Grassroots Minute. As legislation offered by Dianne Feinstein makes its way to the Senate floor, and Joe Biden holds meetings with anti-gun groups in an attempt to ban assault weapons in large-capacity magazines to come up with a viable plan to give to Obama for gun control, is the left really convinced the sheeples will be too lazy and cowardly to fight for the Second Amendment rights? During the past 4 years, the gun-banning left has watched as Americans have broken sales records in purchasing semi-automatic rifles. Now liberals are confident the fallout from Sandy Hook will provide the floor votes necessary to disarm the American people, even though gun and ammo sales went through the roof. It is estimated that over 100 million private citizens are now in possession of over 300 million firearms, which constitutes the largest armed force in the world. And these numbers continue to grow each day. But if the left is willing to pick a fight with millions of American gun owners, it must also believe something far more important. The Americans who have been spending years arming themselves against the ultimate expression of tyranny by their own government, the overthrow of the Second Amendment, will choose not to stand up and fight when the time finally comes. Liberals have watched Americans stand down for every legislative assault and robbed of more and more liberty as they do nothing but vote them in and cuss them out every 2 or 4 years. In short, the left has come to expect disinterested submission from the sheeples trained for decades to follow and accept the good intentions of their elected betters. And it's a safe bet. Neither Democrats nor rhinos will expect anything different from the majority of Americans this time around as they plan a funeral for the Second Amendment. The left is convinced Americans won't fight for Second Amendment rights. We'll soon find out if they are right. I'm Terry Varner for the Grassroots Minute.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
We're back. You're listening to Missouri Grassroots Radio. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and this is your Culture Vigilante Hour. We've had a lot of stuff going on tonight, talking about how you can get involved and engaged in fighting back against your attack on Second Amendment rights and the culture with the invasion of the Islamic takeover in America, and just generally, bringing conservative values back to the mainstream, folks. You don't have to roll over for politically corrected liberal left ideas, as Mason Weaver talked about. Now we have a very talented young man with us tonight. We need to start a book club here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, because we just have authors just crawling out of the woodwork with the most amazing, amazing works coming through. And tonight we have David Workman with us, and he is an author, and he just published another novel called Absolute Authority. It is a novel, I believe, and it is has got some very eerie parallels to what's going on today. Thanks for being with us, David.
Yeah, thank you, Lisa.
Oh, am I losing you? Are you there, David? Oh, I think I lost him. We'll wait just a second, see if we can't get him back here, because I can't hear a thing. David, are you there? Oh, we lost him. If he can call back, maybe we can get him back on the program. I think we had a computer problem here. Anyway, David's a very talented author, and we'll try to talk to him in a second. We'll talk about a couple of other things. We have a great lineup here at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. We have programming that we can fill 7 nights a week. We're bringing on some new people in 2013. On Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock, Cynthia Davis is joining us. She's been here for a couple of weeks now, and Cynthia is just an amazing person. We love her point of view. She's been a legislator in the legislature for 8 years. She just ran for lieutenant governor and was unsuccessful in that race. But the great thing about Cynthia is that she is just refreshingly honest. She says what she means. We need so much more of that in government today. And she will be here with us every Tuesday night for as long as we can keep her here. And we just loved having her here. And on Mondays, we always have Dave Court, Mr. Hour of Truth. Again, more truth, all the truth he can handle. And on Thursday evenings, Kevin Harned is Hillbilly Logic here every Thursday evenings from 7 to 9, and he always brings a great lineup to the show as well, to Missouri Grassroots Radio. We actually have a pretty great lineup here next week on the Culture Vigilante Hour. We're going to have Tom DeWeese. We talk a lot about Agenda 21 here, and we've had Ray Cuneo on for several weeks, and he has just been a wealth of information for a very, very long time. And about educating us on what Agenda 21 is. Most people don't even have a clue. It's been going on for 20-plus years in America, and they've been building a structure for the UN to become a one-world order, and we've been helping them here in America. And it goes all the way down to the very most basic level of your government. And Tom and Ray Cuneo has been giving us the outline and really educating us on how that works. And next week we're going to have Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Institute with us to talk about actions that you can take to fight Agenda 21. And Gretchen Logue and Ann Gassel from Missouri Education Watchdog are going to be with us next week to talk about the education and the Common Core thing that's going to blow up here and cost you more tax dollars because it's all about the assessments and you got to pay for them. And Dan Sexton of the John Birch Society is also going to be with us. John Birch has developed an active program on also fighting Agenda 21, and he's going to be with us again next week. And I do believe that we have David back with us. So, David.
Sorry about that. Right as you introduced me, my cell cut out. So I was trying to say hi to you, and I got nothing.
We have a full moon or something tonight because I've been technical difficulties with all kinds of things. So
we're okay. Well, I'm here now, so we're good.
Good. We're glad you're back with us. Tell us about absolute authority. I from what I remember from talking to you a couple of weeks ago, the parallels in your book and reality, pretty good.
Yeah, it is a novel, but as any good novel is, you scrape the edge of truth along the way. And that's what I tried to do with this. And I put a lot of real-life type scenarios into the book for the purpose of not just entertainment, but like I said, they're kind of real life, and we need to be aware of the real threat that we do still face from traditional enemies like the Soviet Union, which now calls itself Russia, but is basically the same country they've always been ever since Stalin took over. They've just remarketed themselves, repackaged themselves so that we don't think they're the same thing. But I've been following them since basically the early 80s and through the Cold War. And I see many of the same things going on today as happened 30 years ago. They just have just gotten a new flag, new colors, and changed the packaging.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very effective. We see it in all kinds of things. We see it in education. We see it in all kinds of legislation for all kinds of issues. So, historical fiction is a great way to learn about what's really going on in your world.
Yes, it is. And what I've done with this book, just to give you a Reader's Digest version of what happens in the book without giving away any secrets, is my main character, Gordon McAllister, who, by the way, in his fictional world, lives in Wildwood, so it's a locally set book, and about 75% of it is locally set here in St. Louis. He is an executive recruiter by day, but he moonlights for the U.S. government, actually working directly for the president in an assassin capacity. And he's reserved for very specialized missions. He doesn't get typical special ops missions. He gets something that special ops perhaps can't handle or shouldn't handle because it'd be too obvious. And those are the kinds of missions that he goes on. And during the course of this, he sniffs out an attack that's going to take place right here in the U.S. Using a combination of old Russian munitions and new Russian technology, which they have, as they always had done, stole directly from us and just backward engineered to make their own version of it. And that's he sniffs this whole thing out. And then his idea is, how do I find who's behind the whole thing? How do I go up the ladder to find out who's really the power behind this and what are they trying to do? And that's where the whole storyline takes you, is this quest or this journey to find out who's really behind all this evil, who's really behind all this attack, and what's the purpose of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Absolute Authority because obviously whoever's trying to do this wants to take over and have absolute authority. And the question is, who is it and how are they going to do it? And then, of course, how do you stop it from happening?
Yeah, well, and we're living it. It's happening to us right now.
It is, and the technology that I use in there are, like I said, it's actual technology. That there's a Russian stealth drone called the SCAT, it's SKAT, and it's modeled after our X-37 and also some of our older stealth technology. And basically what happened early in the book, this enemy, this unknown enemy, smuggles one into the country, into the U.S., and they're able to operate pretty much unfettered on the east coast of the United States. And it's not the only enemy we have at the time, but that's one of the things they're doing is they're operating because of stealth, and they can do whatever they want to, fly wherever they want to. And that's part of the threat, is that we have to figure out how do you find a stealth or an aircraft that's designed not to be found. And now it's in U.S. airspace. And we're used to being on the other end of that, where we go somewhere and bomb somebody else, and now it's happening to us, and now what do you do about it?
What a great screenplay this would be.
I've had a couple of people who have read it and said it should be turned into a movie, so I'm all for it.
Yeah, I bet. This is not your first book.
It's my first novel, but not my first book. I had a real estate book, which is a nonfiction, and frankly, I didn't think it was all that great, so I switched to novels instead. And I do have a second novel in the works right now. I'm actually writing it as we speak, and I have a plot line for a third one as well. Second one will be even more local. A little preview of that one is that, of course, every 4 years we have an election. Mm-hmm. And then before that, we have primaries to decide who's going to be in the final running. And then once the primaries are finished, we have this nice little season called the debate season, which is about 3 weeks long. And Washington University here in St. Louis has hosted 3 presidential debates. Well, in my book, they're going to host a 4th one, except that it won't turn out exactly as everybody planned it to be. And that's as far as I'll go with it.
Okay, that's very interesting. That's a great teaser for that book. Well, this sounds just riveting, so this will be great. How can people get your book, David?
If they don't live in the St. Louis area, then you can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and it's available both in paperback and also the ebook format, Nook for Barnes & Noble and Kindle for Amazon. It will soon be on the Kobo, which is a fairly new e-reader, and they have kind of a limited library, but I'm going to put it on there as soon as I get it uploaded to them. And then if you're here in the St. Louis area, there's 2 places to get it locally. There's the all-on-the-same-page bookstore in Creve-Coeur, which is a small independent bookstore on Olive in Creve-Coeur. And then also you can get it, I hope soon, I'm working with the agent over there at Left Bank Books also to get it in their location as well.
Yeah, awesome. Dad, do you have a web page for your book?
It's davidworkman.wordpress.com.
Okay, very good. David, this sounds great. I can't wait to read your book. It sounds so exciting, and we're glad to publicize some Missouri homegrown talent here. So that sounds just awesome. Are you having do you have any book signings planned at the moment?
I just had one. I had one at the bookstore, the All on Same Page bookstore. I had one out at the Rendezvous Cafe and Wine Bar out in O'Fallon. I'm still working on getting about 2 or 3 others. I have a couple maybe lined up soon, but I don't have anything finalized, so I can't really announce them yet.
Okay, well, if something happens with that, send me the information, and I'll post it on the Missouri Grassroots Coalition page.
Okay, sounds great.
Put it on the calendar. Take a look, look out for David's books there, and go to Amazon and get them there. And, David, thanks for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Lisa. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Bye.
Okay, that's going to wrap it up for us tonight, folks. Like I said, next week we have Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center going to talk to us about Agenda 21. So if any of you folks know about Agenda 21, Tom DeWeese is like the guy who knows just about everything there is to know. Next to Ray Cuneo, who is a regular here on the Culture Vigilante Hour. And don't forget to tune in tomorrow night with Kevin Harned. Come back on Monday with Dave Court and Tuesday with Cynthia Davis. And you can follow me on Facebook, Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Coalition has a Facebook page. Please join us there. All of our information about how to get on our website and join us on our website at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Join us on, click and fill in your information in the join tab. We are also Facebook and Twitter there. My blogs are culturevigilante.wordpress.com and homeschoolingunited.wordpress.com. You can follow me there. And we will be back with you again here at 7 o'clock on Wednesday night, and we hope to see you then. Thanks for being with us.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.